Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
Eric, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
How are the holidays?
Happy New Decade.
New Decade.
Yeah.
That's right. That was an epic a decade for investing.
It was. It was almost, it was utopia-esque. I think the market was up 300%-ish. You know, in 2019, everything was up. It reminds me of the Lego song, you know, everything is awesome.
Yeah.
That's sort of what happened, and who knows what will happen this decade.
So new year, new decade.
Yeah. How was your holiday break?
It was great, except for my kid tripped, got stitches, only two, but we had to get him out this morning. And man, that was like the most painful thing I've ever endured. It's a four-year-old getting stitches removed.
Yeah. Oh, oof. Man. And plus,
my blood pressure is still high.
Yeah. When little kids get hurt when they're your own, it's rough.
Yeah. But enough about that.
Probably rougher on the parents.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. It's honestly that traumatic.
Yeah. Let's not look at that as a foreshadow for the year.
So what are we going to talk about in this episode?
So, you know, we've gotten in the weeds the last couple episodes talking shop. And this is an episode I've wanted to do for a couple months. And it's really, you know, one of the things you hear about ETFs that people like me and other analysts will say is that they've democratized investing, right? They give you access to everything under the sun with one click of a button. But have they really? And, you know, there was a podcast that Tyrone Ross was on with the great Nate Geraci that was in Union Square Park. He just whipped out his phone. And on it, Tyrone said, no, not really, because half of the country is unbanked. They don't own ETFs. ETFs are really Wall Street. It was a conversation around crypto. And it just reminded me, it was like a light bulb moment, that half of America doesn't even invest. And to me, ETFs and you know, mutual funds to an extent are so easy for certain people but harder for others. And I wanted to explore the other half. And this is also part of the wealth gap. The wealth gap is partially so big because the half that has stocks is getting richer and richer and the half that doesn't isn't. And that's a real, really big issue in the country. So we'll ETFize it a little bit, but this is probably going to be one of our more broader outside of the ETF scope conversations. And we brought in the man himself.
You dropped a name in there, Tyrone Ross. Who's that guy?
I met
that
him.
That guy right there.
Yeah. I met him digitally first on Twitter, but then met him at a conference inside ETFs he's been to. Then I met him more at WealthStack, and then we had a clip of him on the show where you talked about some of this stuff. So we're going to take that little seed and really explore it on this episode.
So financial consultant, works with a lot of people. I'm really curious to hear what he has to say. So on this episode of Trillion, investing advice with Tyrone Ross. So Tyrone, I have to ask, your official name, according to your Twitter handle, is Tyrone V. Ross Jr.
Yes.
Tyrone Ross, okay?
Tyrone Ross is fine.
Okay. Yeah.
My dad won't listen to this.
What's the V for?
Vance.
Vance.
So, well, that's a cool name.
My whole name is Tyrone Vance Gordon Sebastian Wiltshire Ross Jr.
Oh my God, that's the most amazing name I've ever heard.
So I use V as a middle initial, and my dad uses G because when I actually started to establish credit and all of that stuff,
there was a lot of,
we had to separate ourselves.
Okay, one more time. What are the names?
Yeah, one more.
Tyrone Vance Gordon Sebastian Wiltshire Ross Jr.
My kids got four names. That's like the best law firm I've ever heard of.
you're a law firm.
two lines of our birth certificate.
That's awesome. So Tyrone, you have kind of an amazing story. Financial consultant now. Mm-hmm. Before that, I have to ask, you were an Olympic.
Three-time Olympic failure is how I introduced myself.
Okay, I was about to call you an Olympian, but near Olympian.
Yeah. No, thank you for clearing that up. That happens a lot, and if people knew how hurtful it was, they wouldn't make that mistake.
But okay, so what was your race?
400 meters.
Yeah?
Yeah,
400
Best time?
Meters. 45.93. That is a full 10 seconds faster than I ever ran it in high school. That's amazing. I would be at the corner, and you'd be at the finish line. And so what was the spark that got you interested in doing, you know, entering the world of finance?
Man, so it's been a really circuitous route, but I'll go right to the point of it. I was in graduate school and 25, 26 years old, and I had a graduate professor, and he goes, man, you'd be great on Wall Street. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I think about that now, and I realize that literally was the seed that births why I'm so passionate about this, because me being 26 years old and not knowing what the stock market was, that set me and my family back forever, right? And we can only try and get some of that back. And I've spent the last 14 years trying to accumulate as much information as I can, but I realized at that moment when he said that, and then I get this job at an investor relations firm that I actually had to come here for and get up to speed on Bloomberg, which was cool, but I miss using the Bloomberg terminal. And
we can hook you up with one.
Yeah, yeah.
Just cost a couple $1,000.
Yeah, no problem. We'll chip in. We'll split it three ways. And I tell the story a lot, but I get the job, and it was right on water at the end of Wall Street, and I walk right by the exchange. And again, I have no idea where I am. So that's kind of how it started. Started doing investor relations, had a mentor there. It was at Lehman, and he was like, you know, you're using Big Dough and Bloomberg. And he's like, you seem like a caged lion. Like, he's like, you should go on the retail side. And I'm like, well, what's that? Right? And he's like, you got to get licensed or whatever. So I get my 7 and 63 from a little chop shop here in One Penn Station, cold call, 600 dials a day. Heard about a wirehouse. I was like, what's a wirehouse? So it's kind of just been this step along the way. And I've been blessed to have mentors and people kind of help me learn. But it's been a really uphill journey trying to learn. But now I use all of those experiences now to speak to the group that we're trying to reach and speak for today.
Break it down. How do you talk to that group?
When I talk about this topic and I bring it up, I understand that it's not the norm of conversation. It's a very hard conversation.
It's really hard.
Yeah, because, again, and being a financial advisor and coming to a financial service, we sell our knowledge and advice to wealthy people. You are not taught to care about me, like my family. So when you come in this business, the juxtaposition of coming from nothing and then sitting across from people who have probably more money on, right, than your parents will ever have, right? I'm my parents' retirement. My parents don't have a retirement. I'm their retirement, right? Their son, who's the first to graduate high school, is their retirement. So that juxtaposition is very hard to figure out. And when I was at Merrill, and they're like, well, there's a $250,000 minimum, in my head, I'm like, what? Right? And I'm talking to people, and I started to realize that what I started to do was go to them, get proximate to them. That is the only way it works. So we have to break the mold of sitting in a cushy office or having seminars or conferences and literally go to where there's people, those people are. And the truth is right now we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. One of the ideas I had for, you know, sort of a giving back life after Bloomberg is a nonprofit, because I was like, ETFs, you don't have that minimum. You can just buy them, right?
Yep.
And, you know, just getting that bridge between how easy an ETF is, how cheap it is, so you get to keep all the money, to people who might not be able to find them or have the education to use them. But that isn't enough. Like, there's a missing link to this, which is a bigger issue, which I think is what we wanted to explore. It's not that easy.
I think just coming off of holidays, this one like resonates for me because I think, and maybe a lot of people, because when you talk to even like family members who maybe are a little bit younger, right, and inexperienced and don't really understand the difference between even like a stock or a bond,
right,
maybe a little bit like our producer Magnus, you get this glaze. It's almost like you get this glaze expression in their eyes of just like, you know what. I don't know how to do it, and I'm not really willing to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, at Thanksgiving dinner, if I took the 8 people around the table, maybe 6 don't know what ETF even stands for.
Right.
And
I can go with probably 7. Your wife is just, like, playing along. But, like, so when you encounter that look in people's face, on people's faces, like, how do you start talking to them to change the conversation?
I don't want to say it is an easy conversation for me, again, because when you come from it, I was raised in an unbanked home. I'm always surrounded by people who don't own stock or don't own those things. So you have to find a way to bridge, right? You have to bridge the gap between where their knowledge base is and where they're actually trying to go. So you can distill all this knowledge that you have and then understand where they are and then say, okay, well, you have a job, you have a 401k. Right. You try and find little outlets. Right. And things that make sense to them, or just simply saying, OK, well, I know this person is using money orders. They're using payday loans. They're using check cash. Right. Bank checking, savings. Right. Money markets, CDs. Right. Like, this goes all across. And then you have a generational divide. Right. Where, you know, those that I remember, I was at a crypto conference and I'm telling, you know, I was talking to a really young, he had to be early 20s. And I'm like, if you want to talk about make or die, and get people to understand Dai, try and speak to him about it in terms of CDs. Not only did it, he did not know what a certificate of deposit was, he didn't know what a CD was, like the music thing. So that's like, so I, what I try and do is, again, make it relatable and then weave a little bit of my story into it, but just simply try and find an avenue where it'll kind of make sense for them. And that's where the power of proximity comes, because until, I can't tell you anything until I'm familiar with your circumstance. Right. Once I see your circumstance, once I see what you're dealing with, then I can go right. And I'm holding up an iPhone. This. Right. I continue to say this, and I will say it. This is the most important thing I will ever say. Is this device changed our business forever, because it was no longer important for people, everyday people, to have an advisor at J.P. Morgan to bring them these ideas. They can get it all from here. They can do it all from here. But we'll get into that.
So
it changed a lot of businesses.
Not just yours.
Oh, yeah. It still is. So let's break this down into three parts.
Sure.
You call it the three E's. So we have just simply three ways to get more people investing.
Yep.
Let's start with number one, which you say is exposure. What do you mean?
Let's keep it very basic, right? The main one is, and I was just thinking about this the other day having a conversation. There are so many people who aren't even invested in the stock market, but also don't know how to use the app on a phone. So you need to be taught how to use a financial app, because you can. I can go right now into Harlem, or I can go to the South Bronx, where 50% of the people are unbanked, and I say, you have all these apps on your phone. We then have to take the next steps to show people how to use it. How do you use Cash App, right? How do I buy stock on Cash App now? How do I buy Bitcoin? Whatever the case may be. So there's an education there, but the exposure starts young, and I always use this example. I do work with a program in Newark, New Jersey, and I spoke to the kids about the basics, stocks, bonds, checking account, savings, this, that, or whatever. And they went home and they were all fired up. And the parents was like, who is this guy you brought in to talk to our kids? We want to talk to him, too. So then I got an auditorium full of parents. So that exposure is just getting people getting out of our bubble, which we all live in, this privileged bubble, and get close to people where I just saw a tweet. Again, I love Michael Batnick and I love everybody who laughed and made a joke about it. But there was a Varo ad. And the ad said, no fees for a negative balance. I didn't find that funny. And I never will. Because guess what? When you grew up unbanked and the majority of people in this country are hurt by, I was just having a conversation with someone, a friend of theirs has $6,000 in overdraft fees. $6,000. It makes no sense. So I think those things, the exposure goes two ways. One, when you are exposed to people who are not living the way you live and you see their condition, you are able to expose them to better. It also changes you, because now when you see that ad, you think twice. I walked here and saw people laying on the sidewalk on cold concrete, right? On a way to record a financial podcast, right? The juxtaposition of that, it changes you. So now you realize, okay, there's other people who aren't thinking like me, so it changes you and them. But the exposure goes both ways. And it's just simply giving the basics of the you know, the wealth of information that we all have.
You mentioned something that I don't know about, which is Cash App. What's that?
Cash App is an app. Square owns it. In Cash App, the beautiful thing about Cash App is this. If you don't have an account, they'll actually give you one, a routing number, checking. You can do debit there. Like, it's literally, and it's very big in the South because, again, a lot of the South are unbanked. The other piece of it on Cash App, what they're allowing you to do, you can send money. It's like a Venmo. To me, it's a better Venmo.
Okay.
Right? You can send money.
Can I send you emojis?
No, you can't.
Oh.
You can't. There's that part of it. They took that goofy part out, which I like. shout to Jack. So you can send money. You can request money. They give you, again, a debit card, all those things. You can also swipe right. You can buy Bitcoin in an instant. I tell people all the time, the reason why we don't need a Bitcoin ETF, and I'm saying it on the Bitcoin ETF podcast, Nate and whoever else, we don't need it, is because of Cash App. And none of you have given me a good reason why since. If Cash App exists, we don't need an ETF. Let's move on. So buy Bitcoin or Cash App. It goes right into cold storage. You can withdraw. You can do whatever you want with it. They've also now allowed you to fractionally invest into stock right there in the app. So that's essentially what it is. It's a better Venmo, a better PayPal, all of those things. So that's essentially what it is.
So Cash App is key, or could be something else in 10 years, but this kind of an app, because most people have phones at this point, right? In fact, if we look at the half that isn't invested, what percentage of them do you think have a phone that could get that app?
The majority. And that's what people don't understand about fintech. Another thing that bothers me, we have all these conversations about fintech this, fintech that. You know who the greatest users of fintech are? It's that demographic. And if you scroll down even more, it's people of color, right? And I'll scroll down even more because I still don't know what people of color means, but black people. Right. So the majority of folks have a phone. They have these apps on their phone. But again, either they don't know how to use them or they don't know how to use them properly. So it's the same thing. I could have an ETF. I could have a brokerage account. I can have an RA. It doesn't mean I know the ins and outs of how it works. Right. So that's where the second E comes in. But.
Oh, yeah. Well, there
it's
you
a
go.
Good segue. Yeah. my next question, really, I guess it's a good segue is. So I've seen you post clips of you teaching people. Mm-hmm. You're in Detroit with Phil doing some education there. Yep. Let's just go over the education now that we know the tools.
Second E.
Great question. Yeah.
Education.
So, right. So the second part of that is, again, the education piece, which is simply saying, okay, well, what is it you have access to? I always ask that, right? What do you use to bank yourself right now or whatever the case may be? And if they say, well, they still use money orders or they still use payday loans or whatever, I try and say, well, like the whole, there's an app for that, right? Like you kind of do that. Or you ask them if they do have apps, like which are you using? And then try and get them to understand the full robust capabilities of that. But the main piece of education is, as we were talking about before we were recording, as an industry, that's what we like to lead with. We're smart. Right. Some of us, or I'm not, but some of us are Ivy League educated and have all these big degrees or whatever and so on and so forth. So we like to just cram education down people's throat. But again, going back to the exposure piece, if I've exposed myself to what it is you have access to, now I know what to talk to you about. Right. OK, well, you want to invest. But here's a updated version of that. So you may be someone, again, I talk about this all the time. You may be a part of a SUSU. All of my Caribbeans out there know what a SUSU is. The four of us sitting at this table, we all put in a hand $100. We all get $400 at some point. We're trusting everybody's going to put in a hand. Crypto folks, that's the first blockchain, by the way. Anyway, so we all put in our four hands. It's trustless. No bank, no lending, no credit checks, right? So if I know that you are part of a SUSU, which my parents are, now here's the beauty of this. My parents are in a SUSU. They can't contribute to it unless my mother texts me and says, can you send it electronically? See what I'm saying? Like, this is how this works. So even now we've come to the point where even the people who are outside of the banking system still can't interact until we get them exposed to the basics of. My parents can't use an app. You cannot tell me they're the only ones. There's millions of people who can't use an app or won't use it. So that's where the education piece comes in, because now in order for us to even get the full robustness of all the technology that we have, we still got to bring these people into the banking system to show them the next step.
Are there nonprofit organizations that say are a little bigger than, you know, you and Phil, like a larger one that are doing this, trying to get people, because this, the phone really is a monster resource for this.
Yep.
Is that happening? Or are they still going to schools and teaching, like, what is a stock and bond and not going into the practical side of things?
Well, that's the true democratizer. But yeah, they are going into schools. I don't know of any that are actually doing that bare bones basic work, which is why I do it, and which is why I partner with folks, and I think is why a lot of people want to partner with me, because there's layer to this, right? We, and again, God bless all our troops, but just to use this as an example is, we need Navy SEALs. We need people who are going to be boots on the ground. Literally get into the trenches, see, feel, touch people's condition. Then there's a layer of people that say, okay, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to speak at conferences. I'm going to do podcasts, whatever. And then there's people at the top that just got to drop down the blessings, right? They write checks and they fund
the God level, I call it.
Yeah, the God level. Yeah. Everyone has a role here. But I think we need more organizations and more people, all you folks that want me to speak at your conference. We need to get, again, there's no reason why we can't get 10 advisors at a conference to go into or bring kids or people, whatever, into a room and literally talk about the bare basics of this stuff and make that a concurrent thing.
Does Cash App or Square do this
yes.
kind of outreach?
Cash App. They do fantastic education. The two pieces that they put out, one on what a stock is, not a financial firm in the country did anything better on how to explain what a stock was. And here's how I know.
Have they done a bond yet?
They haven't yet. They haven't. Right. That's coming. Bonds
on
Bitcoin
blockchain.
What about
an ETN? No, TVIX? No. Explain it. Okay.
Yeah. No. Want to go there? Yeah. but they did so good of a job with that is right after they announced it, and my sister went on and actually watched it, she texted me and said, oh, what do you think about buying stock on Cash App? right? Like, because she instantly understood what the hell a stock was. So they do a really good job with that. But we need more of that. And that's where I think your Varos win, your fintechs, your Cash App, your Chimes, your Acorns, like all of these companies, they're doing a really good job of educating people and giving them, okay, well, yeah, we have these options for you, but we have to educate you first, and then here's how we're going to make it so simple for you ongoing.
One question. With Cash App, does it matter that, is it one of those, I forget the name for it, network effect, where everybody has to use it for it to work well, or could, like, Cash App be used 10 years, even though, like could it, you know how MySpace became irrelevant?
Yeah.
Can Cash App still be used without a lot of people using it?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay,
yeah,
so
100%. Yep.
So any of those could be used. You don't have to use the one at the
right.
time, right?
And okay. and then people go, well, you need a banking account to set it up. First of all, they'll give you one, right? And then the other piece is, if I want to set up a Cash App and I go onto the app and I set it up or whatever, and I don't have an account, there is a way if someone that does have one, right, they can help you get up to speed once, right? So one hand wash the other, they both wash their faces, my mother would say. But there's literally no reason why, outside of, again, the first exposure, that no one should have access to banking in this country. It's a joke.
And you've talked a lot about how if you do get the Cash App and you have the phone and you're at that step, you think crypto has been a good first step before you get to stocks, bonds, and ETFs,
100%,
right?
100%. Why?
Why is that?
Well, what crypto did, take all of the buzzwords out of it. It was the first asset class in history where it was literally, I could buy a piece. All I needed was an internet connection and the phone, right? And it was done. Also, what it meant was now I don't have to worry about all of these crazy signups, KYC, this, that, and the third. It's me to you. So if you needed something right now, I'm about to get evicted. Send me some money. You get it now, right? It's me to you, as opposed to got to wait 2 days or this, that. Like, so that's what crypto really means for the unbanked. That's the product market fit that they don't really want to go into and talk about. But that's why I'm so passionate about crypto. It's not, it's some of the other stuff, but it's that. And that's why it's so important for me, for the millions of people, right? Let's just call it roughly 20% of the country. If we're going to pull them into the banking system, I think the best way to do it is to explain to them the power of crypto, especially Bitcoin. Again, not the little B, the big B, the actual blockchain, right? The Bitcoin blockchain, not blockchain, the buzzword, of what that actually meant for how financial services has changed forever. The ability to send money, me to you, simply as someone will walk on the street, or I can hand you $20 right now.
You're welcome to. I'll take that. Okay, so 30, what's that?
I have empowerment and endowment.
Yeah,
it's two E's.
Yeah, like, it's two prong. the endowment piece is a shout out to Phil and Detroit Investing U, but just in general, because what I realized, which is
let me
missing.
Just pause real quick, yeah, and explain. Phil Bach,
yeah,
has a company called Exponential ETFs, famous, mm-hmm, for the RVRS, the reverse cap weighted, and you teamed up with him to, mm-hmm, do financial literacy education in Detroit, where he's based.
Right, exactly. Okay. So we're working on a project now to bring financial education to the whole city of Detroit, right? Whether you're sitting in a prison or you are sitting in a Fortune 500 company, it's for everyone in the city to be led by financial advisors to provide financial literacy as early as possible to children, all the way up to providing financial education for teachers, employees, businesses, entrepreneurs, startups, you name it. So we're still doing the grunt work with that now. If you want to help and partner, please reach out. The empowerment piece is this. So I've exposed you. Now you have questions. Right. How do I work at Bloomberg? OK, well, this is right. And then you educate me on the process of how to get hired. The empowerment piece is now you continue to undergird me and support me with articles, links, whatever the case may be, continued meetings, progress, right? All of these things. So the last part of those three E's, which our business is probably the worst at, is that we'll go to the inner city school and we'll take a picture with the kid and say, you know, we with the check. And then we go away, and the pompous circumstance is over. And that's one of the things, to be honest, when I had a conversation with Phil, I'm like, if you think that I'm getting involved with this for that, it's wrong. We got, because that's the thing. I've gone on record saying I believe in 20 years the financial services industry will be the most beloved industry in the world. because it's changing. There are thoughtful givers who realize that it's time for us to lead. No one else. Financial advisors to lead this movement. So the empowerment piece is saying, okay, well, we'll come to your school. I'll speak at your school. While I'm there, I'm going to ask about student lunch debt, and I'm going to ask about the students who can't graduate because they owe money to the library. I'm also going to ask to speak to the parents. We're also going to create an endowment so that the kids get books, so that the 80% of young black men that are boys who are 9 years old in this country that cannot read, that's a crisis for everybody, by the way, that they start to get the resources that they need. So now I can leave a book at your school, but if I come and read to you and I look into this little boy's face and he can see me, that I'm invested in him. And that's what this is about. We need to invest in people. Wall Street doesn't invest in people, like literally putting something in them.
Yeah, and let me, you know, I want to throw this out at you, and something I've been thinking about, especially last year because the market was up 30%. If you look at the extra revenue that Wall Street firms, asset managers got, really for doing nothing extra, because they get paid as a percentage of the assets, and the assets balloon because the market's up 30%, it's almost like a subsidy they get. It's almost like socialism for this industry. And it seems like that might be a good thing. That extra gravy might be a good thing to take and package back into what you're talking about.
Absolutely. No, we should. But I think, again, somebody has to lead and jump over the wall first. And that's what I'm trying to do. But there are some financial advisors who have reached out to me. So there's one group of advisors who are taking some of the only reason they sell insurance is to take the fees and donate it to a financial literacy movement. We may be getting them involved with Detroit Invest in You. I think that's a great idea. Right. Also, I had a meeting this past Sunday with a gentleman who's a very big time. He reached out to me on LinkedIn, big time executive at Mass Mutual. He said there is a $1 billion fund, billion with a B, for financial advisors and folks at Mass Mutual to use for philanthropic things. He said no one touches it because they don't get paid for it. And they don't see any ROI from it, so they don't actually be proactive to use it. That is a problem. So again, I think, and here's the other thing. I want to make this very clear. The bigger issue that I've learned being in this industry 14 years and seeing how I've been treated, how people who where I come from get treated, people who look like me get treated, is there's a lack of education. You can get a CFP, a CFA, an MBA, or whatever. They don't teach you how to give. We don't know how to give. So if you don't know how to give, I can give you $1 billion, but you're going to find everything to do with it for yourself. But if you don't know how to give, literally say, let me be proactive in my thought process of how I structure my giving. That's where the empowerment piece comes in, because now it says, okay, well, we have these certain, we look at our book of business as a financial advisor and say, okay, well, you know, there might be $20,000, $30,000 left here that we can do something with. Okay, let me go to the school system where I don't want my kids to go and see if I can utilize the money there. Not so the rowing team and the travel soccer team and all this stuff have more of what they already have, but to make sure those kids over there get equal opportunity. And by the way, I always say this, I'm that other kid. So if no one did it for me, I wouldn't be sitting here.
We're at the beginning of the year, and yeah. I think, you know, that's... Everybody makes resolutions, right? How do you help people right now, clean slate, beginning of the year? How do you help them take charge of their life in a way that you know, maybe wouldn't have worked in the past?
I think one of the things that I think is really important, and if you're speaking from a financial standpoint, when you're talking about that demographic and just people in general, what again, the privileged conversation that we have is we talk about ETFs and how you could invest in muni bonds and this, that, whatever, and crypto, whatever. Some people just simply need to understand how to make more money. People just don't make enough, right? So one of the things that I try and tell people to do, and it's really simple, I understand is, again, Digit, all these budgeting apps, this, that, or whatever. I believe in the power of exposure. If I see it, I can be it. So this is what I tell everybody. I don't care who you are, 50 million, 100 million, whatever. You're poor, you're this, that, whatever. Take a white piece of paper, draw a line down the middle. Every cent that comes in, on the other side, every cent that goes out. And it's basic. If you got a number on the bottom left, you're blessed. If you don't have a number, if you have a number on the bottom right, there's something you need to look at. What is it that I need to fix? Then you take the next step of saying, take the last 3 months of your checking or whatever it is you're doing and look at where you spend your money. I tell all my clients, there's people I talk to, give me the last 3 months of your checking account and I don't need to know nothing about you. I know how much you make, where you spend it, how often you spend it, what time you spend it. Like, I can learn a lot about you from that. So I think what we need to do, and what I try to do with my platform, is just get people to be transparent and open with themselves. Because once you start to understand self, then you could be a more thoughtful giver, more thoughtful husband, more thoughtful father, right? More thoughtful advisor. And to be honest, and I don't want this to go off without saying this, because these moments are important. What you gentlemen have just done for me is exactly it. If you don't do anything else this year, you have to understand what this means to me and the people that I speak for and I fight for. And it's hard and it's exhausting, and people laugh at you and they tell you those people don't matter. But when I go and sit with my parents, I realize it matters, right? When my mother says, you know what, man, we would love to know what it's like to have $100 whenever we need it, right? Like, just imagine that, right? Having to raise children with no formal education. So if the fact that you guys have done this and exposed the people that I fight for and speak for to this is really important. And it speaks to the larger purpose, again, of just giving, right? Giving someone a platform, giving someone the opportunity to speak for those who don't have a voice. But that it can only come, right, as Eric said, with personal reflection, where it's like, okay, I feel like I can do a little more here. Well, let me go tap him on the shoulder, because he seems like he has a little bit more about that than me. So I don't want to leave this moment without saying I'm extremely appreciative and grateful. This means the world to me. You have no idea. And it's going to take little moments like this to start to change an industry for hundreds of years has ignored the majority of the country. So I appreciate you.
You're welcome. One last thing. This podcast about ETFs. Favorite ETF ticker.
Favorite ETF ticker. Nerd.
That's a good one.
One of the new video game ETFs.
Yeah.
Round Hill.
Nerd is my favorite. I love
that. That is a good
guys.
One. Yeah, that's top 10.
Nerd is top 10, yeah.
Tyrone Ross, thanks for joining us on Trillions.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. I'm at Joel Weber Show. He's at Eric Balchunas. And you can find Tyrone at TR401. This episode of Trillions was produced by Magnus Hendrickson and edited by Jarell Dillard. Francesca Levy is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Bye.